Where do we go from here? It's the first mailbag of the offseason, ahead on the Locked On Jets podcast.
You are Locked On Jets, your daily New York Jets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to the Locked On Jets podcast for Wednesday, January 12th, 2022. I'm your host, John B. from GangreneNation.com. Thank you so much for making this show your first listen each day. Today we have our weekly mailbag if you're new to the show. We have a mailbag each Wednesday with listener questions. Thanks to everybody who sent in questions. I'll get to as many as I can today. Our first question: I hear about the importance of ownership, but I don't really understand why it matters. Can you elaborate? So, ownership really matters a lot in the NFL, and there are a couple of reasons, I think. First of all, the owner is the person who hires the most important people in the organization. We're talking the general manager. Frequently, even if the GM is leading the interview process for a head coach, the ownership is involved there. So, that's number one. And if you look at, say, the Jets over the last decade or so, they've made a lot of bad hires. And I think ultimately what it comes down to is the Johnson brothers, despite Woody being in the NFL for over two decades now, they don't really understand what it takes to build a winner. They don't really understand what the traits are that makes a great general manager or a great head coach. They don't really have a strategy, things that they should be looking for in these leadership positions. And you've seen that manifest itself in so many different ways. I mean, you look back to the 2013 general manager search where they had to lean on Jed Hughes, the headhunter, the executive search guy. And then a couple of years later, when they were looking for a new general manager and head coach in 2015, they brought in Charlie Casserly and Ron Wolf, both guys who were accomplished executives in this league, but guys who, and especially in the case of Casserly, were kind of looking out for people who they liked. You know, Mike Maccagnan got the general manager job because Charlie Casserly really liked him. It wasn't necessarily that Mike Maccagnan was the most qualified guy for that job. So number one is you got to have a good owner who understands the traits he's looking for, who understands what he's looking for, how he wants the team built. You know, the owner is not going to typically be making the decision on who the fifth round pick is, but the owner has an important role in that process, in finding the right guy to make that decision. And another thing is, you don't want an owner who's micromanaging, who's overruling his football people on a consistent basis, because the football people have a greater expertise. There are teams where ownership is too involved, they're too hands-on, and they make bad decisions. You know, I'll give you a good example is the Dallas Cowboys, and one of the reasons they've been much more successful, they've been much better in the draft recently, is Jerry Jones has delegated to this executive, Will McClay. Jerry Jones was frequently too hands-on through a period where the Cowboys struggled quite a bit. In recent years, he's kind of delegated. And a perfect example of this is there's a famous story in the 2014 draft how Jerry Jones wanted to draft Johnny Manziel, and Will McClay kind of put his foot down and said, "We're drafting Zach Martin." So instead of getting a complete bust at quarterback, they got one of the best offensive linemen in the NFL. But beyond that, ownership is the boss. You know, the owner is the boss. And it's his job, it's his or her job to make sure the team is working well together, that the pieces are, the top people in the organization are communicating with each other. An example of this, if you want to go back to the Jets, is we now know that when Todd Bowles and Mike Maccagnan were here, they weren't even really speaking to each other on a consistent basis. And you need those guys in constant communication, because the organization's not going to work successfully unless everybody's working on the same page. What do I mean by that? Well, the head coach has to communicate to the general manager, you know, this is the type of scheme we run, so we need corners with these types of skills. These are the skills you should be looking out for. We need linebackers with this type of skill set. These are the things you should be looking out for. If you don't get that, you get things that, like what happened with the Jets a few years back, where they're making a trade for Rashard Robinson at the deadline, a guy who doesn't really fit what Todd Bowles wants to do. But beyond that, Bowles doesn't even know about it. You know, the press conference, Bowles found out that the Jets had just traded for Rashard Robinson. That was the type of relationship that Chris Johnson allowed to take place with the Jets. So it's a big picture thing. I think ownership's really a big picture type of job. hiring the right people, not micromanaging things, and making sure everything stays on track. It's not the job with the most intricate detail, but it's an important job. And if you don't have good ownership, typically you're not going to be able to build any sort of sustainable success. Our next question, how incredible was week 18? From a fan of a football perspective, I thought it was the most captivating week of a regular season that I can recall in some time. Yeah, it was an outstanding week of football. Unfortunately, we all had to watch the Jets and play Buffalo, but it really was an incredible week of football. I mean, that Pittsburgh-Baltimore game, I caught a bunch of that. It was a great game with both teams still alive for a playoff race. You have the Colts going down to Jacksonville and playing terribly in a game they should have won pretty handily, and the Colts getting eliminated. You know, I mentioned that last week, that there's always some team the last week of the season, they go in with a playoff spot on the line and they lose to some inferior team because the pressure gets to them. And the Colts are the perfect example of that. I mean, there's no way, even with the game at Jacksonville, there's no way they should have lost to that Jaguars team. That opens the door for Pittsburgh and Baltimore. They play an incredible game. And by the way, how ridiculous is the NFL's TV contract? And listen, I say this as a Jets fan, but there's no way, if you were watching that game in New York, they went away from Pittsburgh and Baltimore right before the end in overtime because they had to get to the Jets-Buffalo game. I mean, the Jets-Buffalo game has to be put on an alternate channel. You can't turn that Pittsburgh-Baltimore game away. And I said this as a Jets fan. I said this as somebody who does a Jets Daily Jets podcast. You can't put that game off the air, but that's the ridiculous nature of the NFL TV deal. So, of course, we had to watch the Jets-Bills game in the late afternoon time slot, but you know, I kind of had an eye on the 49ers-Rams game, and that was an incredible game with a playoff spot on the line. And then late in the Buffalo-Jets game, I kind of flipped over. I was flipping between the two games and caught the end. A really classic game between the 49ers and Rams with a playoff spot on the line. But then you get to the Sunday night game, which, oh man, I was rooting so hard for a tie. I mean, what an incredible day it would have been. What an incredible ending it would have been if, after Pittsburgh has this amazing win and thinks that they've saved their season, they end up going home for the playoffs because one team could not score more than the other in the Sunday night game. Not that you needed help from one team, one specific team, and couldn't get it. Not that, you know, you needed the Chargers to win or you needed the Raiders to win. You just needed one of the two teams. It didn't matter which one, to score more than the other. And that couldn't happen. Oh, I was rooting for a tie so hard. That's the only thing that was missing. The tie at the end of the game. And, you know, like, Brandon Staley's getting crushed for this timeout he called, and I still don't entirely understand why, because I know Derek Carr said something like the Raiders changed their approach, but after that timeout, the Raiders ran the ball, and if the Chargers had gotten a stop there, the game probably ends in a tie. The Chargers just didn't stop the run. It's not like the Raiders got more aggressive with their call in that situation. Raiders still ran the ball. The Raiders took a very conservative play call out of the timeout. The Chargers just couldn't get a stop. But man, oh, that would have been the greatest if the game had ended in a tie. Ben Roethlisberger's career ends because one team can't score more than another in a game. By the way, that was a great game. I mean, how many times did Justin Herbert come through in the last couple minutes of that game? And how many fourth downs did the Chargers convert? The Raiders just could not get the stop that they needed with the game on the line. A really great game, back and forth. Very exciting game to close things out. I mean, that's what you want. I mean, that's the ending of the regular season you want. I mean, the NFL's so focused on the playoffs now. And listen, I have to admit, like, I was against the whole idea of the seventh team in each conference, and I think this weekend I'm going to be vindicated because these seventh seeds are not teams that I think need to be in the playoffs. But that finish is one of the things that I think does vindicate the seven teams in the playoffs a little bit. And I think this weekend we're going to pay for it because these seven seeds are not that good. But I agree. I think that that was an amazing finish to the regular season. The only thing that could have made it more amazing is if that Chargers-Raiders game ended in a tie. Now ahead here on the Locked On Jets podcast, we will continue our weekly mailbag. We'll talk a little bit about positional value. But I gotta tell you, there's no protein bar that has more value than Built Bar. And it is the new year, and that means New Year's resolutions. And if yours is about getting fit or eating healthier, make sure to include Built Bar in your plan. Built Bar is the protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. And it makes it easier to stick to your resolution because it tastes so good you want to eat it, unlike other protein bars, which can be chalky or waxy. Normally, by like week 3 of the new year, you're thinking, this is just not worth it, I want chocolate. Built bars are covered in 100% real chocolate. And most Built bars only contain 130 calories, 4 grams of sugar, 4 grams net carbs, and 17 grams of protein. Compare that to a candy bar, which usually has around 240 calories, 30 grams of sugar, and dozens of net carbs. And there are so many delicious flavors to choose from. You got coconut almond, you got peanut butter brownie, you got raspberry, cookies and cream, salted caramel, and mint brownie. So many more. In fact, Built is always coming out with new limited time flavors. So check out Built.com often to see what's new. And while you're there, use promo code LOCKED15 and you'll get 15% off your order. Again, it's promo code LOCKED15, one word with no space, LOCKED, number 1, number 5, for 15% off at Built, BUILT.com. Thanks again for making Locked On Jets your first listen each day. We continue our weekly mailbag. Our next question: if you could choose any non-quarterback position to have an elite player at, what position would it be and why? Well, I think I'd have to go with edge rusher, and that could be a defensive end in a 4-man defensive line front, or he'd probably be an outside linebacker in a 3-man defensive line front. I think that edge rusher is the most important player on defense. Now, I've seen some numbers that suggest maybe it's corner, but I'd still go edge rusher. There's always the classic argument: is it better to get pressure on the quarterback to help the defensive backfield out, or is it better to cover to give the pass rushers more time to get home? But to me, like, an edge rusher impacts both faces of the game in a way a corner does not. You know, corner, they help in run support to a certain extent, but an edge rusher not only gets after the quarterback, but an elite edge rusher also helps shut down the run game by setting the edge, shedding blocks, making plays against the run. To me, there's no player on the defensive side of the ball who has more impact. So if quarterback is the most important player on the offensive side of the ball, I think edge rusher is the most important player on the defensive side of the ball. If I was building a team, the first spot I'd want to fill is quarterback. The second spot is edge rusher, so that I get a premium player at the most important spot on both sides of the ball. So I'd go with edge rusher. Next question. John, do you think Joe Douglas and Saleh could survive another season where the Jets are among the worst teams in the NFL? What do you think is the bare minimum they need to do to ensure they get a third season? Well, you know, I think as much as anything, this comes down to Zach Wilson's development, because I could see a scenario where they survive a bad record, but Zach Wilson looks like he's really heading in the right direction, because if that's the case, there's going to be a lot of optimism around the team heading into 2023. And beyond that, you're going to look at the situation, I think, and you're going to say, you know what, even if you want more wins next season, if this thing's working for our young quarterback, we're going to want to continue with this. We're not going to want to mess around with a formula that's working for our young quarterback. So if you have a rough season and maybe the defense isn't quite there yet and you lose some high-scoring games, but your quarterback's really developed, then I think you could survive even a season where the record isn't so great. That said, I mean, if Zach Wilson's developing, are the Jets really going to go 4-13 again? I think that's one of the things that it's easy to lose track of. I think sometimes you say, well, I'd rather have a losing season, but the quarterback looks good. But the quarterback's play, to some extent, maybe not 100% correlation, but to some extent, the quarterback's play does have an impact on your record. And it doesn't have a small impact. So, I mean, I look for Zach Wilson's development as much as anything. I think if the Jets have another season like this where they're 4-13 and Zach Wilson's not developing at all and he's still at the bottom of the NFL, listen, it's always the coach who pays the price before the quarterback does. Getting rid of the quarterback is always the last resort in the NFL. So typically what happens is you bring in another coach to try and salvage the quarterback. And that means, you know, probably Mike LaFleur is gone, but I would imagine Saleh is gone. And I don't know if Joe Douglas can survive another season like this. I mean, if you get to the end of technically year 4, but really year 3 for Joe Douglas, and you're still at the bottom of the NFL and you haven't made progress, do you stick with that? I'd say no. And I think the Jets cannot be near the basement of the NFL again. I think they need to be playing meaningful games late in the season. I think they need to be in the playoff hunt. I don't think they can be eliminated by Halloween again. I think if that happens, all bets are off. I said this yesterday. I don't think they necessarily enter the season on the hot seat, but I don't think they're 100% safe either. I think they're probably back for 2023, but I can't say it's no matter what. It's similar to the situation I think Adam Gase and Sam Darnold went into in the year 2020, where unless there's a catastrophe, they'll probably be back. But if there's a catastrophe, all bets are off. Our next question. Outside of Becton, Hall, and Mann, do you expect anything from anybody else from the 2020 draft class over the next 2 seasons? I think it's tough to. I don't know who outside of those 3 even has a chance of developing. It seems like it's over for Denzel Mims in New York. If he's going to be successful, he's probably going to need a change of scenery, because it just has not worked with this coaching staff. They just don't seem to see eye to eye on anything. And Mims' confidence seems like it's totally gone. I mean, this is not a guy who should be as bad as he was in 2021. This is a guy with much more ability than he showed. And for whatever reason, it just never clicked with this coaching staff. And maybe it will never click anywhere, but I feel like if it's going to work for him, it's going to happen with a new team in a different city. I mean, Ashton Davis, he may have the physical tools to play safety, but you have to be able to diagnose plays. You have to be in the right spot, and he just never is. Outside of that, I mean, do you want to put a lot of faith in Cameron Clark right now? We don't really know how good he is. So, I mean, I look go up and down the rest of the 2020 draft class, and it just doesn't look very good. Now, ahead here on the Locked On Jets podcast, we'll close out our mailbag. We'll talk about a coach other teams may think has upside. And while we're at it, I want to tell you about an incredible app everyone who buys gas needs to know about called Get Upside. My listeners are making up to 25 cents for every gallon of gas every time they fill up. Just download the free Get Upside app in the App Store or Google Play right now and use promo code TOUCHDOWN to get a bonus 25 cents per gallon on your first fill up. That's up to 50 cents cash back. Don't pay full price at the pump anymore. Get cash back using Get Upside. Just download the app for free and use promo code TOUCHDOWN to get up to 50 cents per gallon cash back on your first tank. Some people who drive a lot are making as much as $200 or $300 a month in cash back, and there's no catch. The cash back gets added right to your account. You can cash out anytime to your bank account, PayPal, or an e-gift card for Amazon and other brands. Just download the free Get Upside app and use promo code TOUCHDOWN to get up to 50 cents per gallon cash back on your first tank. Again, that's promo code TOUCHDOWN for up to 50 cents per gallon cash back on your first tank using the Get Upside app. And BetOnline would like to wish you a happy new betting year as we continue our march to the playoffs and beyond. BetOnline remains your number one spot for all the best sports wagering action for 2022. With a new year and a new updated desktop and mobile website, sign up today and receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Just use promo code LOCKEDON to get started. Again, that's LOCKEDON. It's one word with no space, LOCKEDON. From football, basketball, hockey, boxing, and UFC, right to your favorite Vegas casino games. Don't wait to take advantage of all the amazing offers available for 2022. Because BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to wager on all your favorite sports. BetOnline, where the game starts. This is the Locked On Jets podcast on our Wednesday weekly mailbag show. Our next question comes from Tim. I'm wondering whether there's any chance the Jets lose Mike LaFleur this offseason to a team seeking a head coach. He comes from the Shanahan tree and his brother is a successful head coach with the Packers. Well, there's always a chance. I think the odds would be pretty low this year, however. And I think in the future, Mike LaFleur's chances of becoming a head coach in this league are directly tied to Zach Wilson's development, because it seems like we're kind of in a phase right now where every NFL team wants the hot young offensive mind who can develop a quarterback. And I think there are many teams with a young quarterback that essentially put skills as an offensive coordinator above all else when they're seeking a head coach. And I think in many instances, they do that to their own detriment, because there are a lot more things that go into being a successful head coach than just your ability to call plays. I don't think LaFleur is there yet. I think if Zach Wilson has a really good second season, if he really makes big advances, then you could hear LaFleur in the discussion. Now, that said, I mean, I think LaFleur lived up to the hype this year. I think the hope was that he was going to be a bright young offensive mind who was going to breathe life into this offense and be creative. And I think for the most part, he was, especially after he moved up to the coaching booth after the game or during the game against the Bengals. You know, he was on the field prior to that point, and then the Bengals games where he moved up to the booth. And maybe it's just a coincidence, but it certainly seemed like the play calling improved quite a bit when he was up in the booth. So I think we're still probably at least 1 year away, and a lot of this comes down to having a proven track record developing a quarterback. Is that the thing I'd look for in a head coach? I'm not entirely sure, but that seems to be what teams in the NFL look for. Our next question. The 49ers struggled in Salah's first year as defensive coordinator there. Do you think he looks at his own job path as the Niners coordinator in his decision whether to keep Jeff Ulbrich or not? You know, I haven't spoken with Robert Saleh about this, but I would imagine that he sees a lot of overlap. And it's not just with Ulbrich, but when the 49ers coaching staff arrived in 2017 in San Francisco, the Kyle Shanahan crew, there was a lot of similar criticism to the Jets. They did not have a great year. Now, they finished very strong after the trade for Jimmy Garoppolo, and they won their last five games or so that season. But there were lots of complaints. There was a question, because they went, like the Jets, they went very inexperienced on both the players, and they went pretty inexperienced when they built their coaching staff. And there were lots of questions within the 49ers fan base. Looking back, you can go online and see what people were saying at the time. There was a question, you know, is this coaching staff experienced enough? They wondered whether they hired too many young coaches. A complaint you heard frequently for the Jets this season. And I think Salah probably looks back on this. If, you know, if I were him, I might look back on that experience and it might help guide me. You know, we got all this criticism in San Francisco for the same things. We were building something and eventually it worked out. So my guess is yes. I mean, I haven't spoken with him directly about it, but I think it's kind of logical if you look at the situation in San Francisco they went through to guess that he would feel that way. Our next question: what do you make of the Brian Flores firing? I think he was doing a great job, so as a Jets fan, I'm thrilled he won't be with a division rival. That's an interesting case, and like you, I'm looking at this from afar. I don't have the detailed knowledge that I would have if this was the Jets. So if you're looking for that detailed knowledge, you can listen to our friend Kyle Krabs, the host of Locked On Dolphins. He probably has greater insight. But looking at this from afar, it seemed like there was kind of a power struggle between Flores and the GM, Chris Greer. And ultimately, what it came down to, it seems like, is Flores just did not believe in Tua Tagovailoa as the quarterback. And quite frankly, based on what we've seen, I'm not sure Flores is wrong. And, you know, there are rumors that Flores really wanted Justin Herbert. Now, who knows whether that's true or not? That could be just Flores putting out his side of the story. But it definitely doesn't seem like Flores believed in Tua. And it seems like that was a point of contention. But, you know, there's lots of stuff coming out. Oh, Flores didn't relate to people well. Well, you know something? It does not seem like this was a job performance related thing. Because in 2019, he took over one of the most difficult rebuilding jobs I've ever seen, where the Dolphins pretty much just gutted their entire roster. They put out a team that was barely NFL caliber, and he got them playing pretty well, especially near the end of the season. That was a team, heading into the year, there were questions whether that team would go 0-16, and he ended up winning five games, and they played a lot better as the season progressed. And then back-to-back winning seasons, the first coach in almost 20 years to lead the Dolphins to back-to-back winning seasons. And this is the guy you fire? And, you know, if the players didn't like him, they had a weird way of showing it, because they went from 1-7 to 9-8 this year. I mean, some of the stuff I hear about how he didn't relate to the players, it reminds me of a different sport, but it reminds me of when the Yankees fired Joe Girardi in 2017, and there was all this talk how he didn't connect with the young players. And it kind of seemed like the front office was trying to put out a narrative, but it didn't really make a lot of sense, because that year the Yankees weren't supposed to be that good, and they almost got to the World Series. They were a game away from the World Series that year. And it was kind of like, well, if he had such a difficult time related to the young players, why did they play so well for him? So, you know, looking at this from afar, I think you got to be happy if you're a Jets fan, because they hired a guy who looks like a pretty good coach. Now, not a perfect coach. There were some issues with him building his offensive staff in Miami. I'm not saying Flores is Vince Lombardi, but when you fire a coach who's been relatively successful, you would expect that there's a plan in place. So when they fired him, I assume that maybe something was in the works to bring Jim Harbaugh to Miami, because the owner, Stephen Ross, has connections to the University of Michigan. But I guess that's kind of a double-edged sword, because if he's got ties to the University of Michigan, does he want to be the guy that steals the coach away? And they've denied that Harbaugh is going to end up in Miami. So, I mean, I look at this. Across the AFC East, it's been kind of a frustrating time to be a Jets fan, because Buffalo's really gotten their act together. New England is New England. I mean, I don't think it was very, very realistic to expect New England to just be bad because Tom Brady left. They still have Belichick. Belichick's a pretty good coach, as it turns out, as we found out this year. Who knew? And then you had Miami, which seemed like it was heading in the right direction, but they've essentially kept a GM who wasn't that good at his job over a head coach who seemed pretty competent. So I tend to agree with you. All I can do is give you is my reaction. I was happy they got rid of Flores. I remember a few years back, I was disappointed they fired Gase. If you go back even further, I was really happy they gave Joe Philbin one extra year for seemingly no reason. It's kind of crazy to me that, like, Joe Philbin gets an extra year, but Brian Flores doesn't. Very confusing. but I'm happy to see what seems like dysfunction in Miami.
And our last question. John, most commentators I've read or heard are saying that a new wide receiver is the Jets' biggest offseason priority. There appears to be no mention of how essential 1 to 2 new tight ends are in the Jets system. Tight ends are essential to the run game. See Bill's games for what happens without decent tight ends to run block, and appear to be the primary read of a lot of the play action passes. Should the offseason focus be on getting better tight ends, or is a wide receiver a bigger concern?
Well, both are important, and I think they're going to have to do tight end through free agency. I don't think that they can expect a rookie tight end to go in and play well right off the bat. I think wide receiver is the bigger priority because wide receiver is just a bigger impact position. Unless you get like one of the best tight ends in the NFL, a wide receiver is typically going to have a bigger impact than the tight end and probably will help Zach Wilson out more. But it's not to say tight ends can be ignored. I mean, listen, the Jets have to get better tight ends, but I think wide receiver is a bigger deal because I think a wide receiver will help Zach Wilson out more. And I mean, here's the other thing. The Jets can get almost anybody a tight end and upgrade over what they have, and they should be able to. I'd like to see the Jets make a big move in free agency for a tight end, but I think a wide receiver probably will have more impact. It's a relative question, because doing both is important. I think the wide receiver is going to make a bigger impact than the tight end will, though. Anyway, that's all for our show today. Thank you for listening. This has been the Locked On Jets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. As always, if you enjoy the show, subscribe to it and leave it a good review. I hope you have a great Wednesday, everybody. We'll be back tomorrow to talk more Jets.